Hey folks, Ezra here. I hope you guys are doing well. And since we launched this podcast, the past couple of weeks have been quite something else for me and the team. And I'm grateful all the same to the ones who are back for more, but also to my new friends who've just discovered us and so bravely clicked play. So again, thank you. On the EzraZide project, we present stories, moments, and anecdotes of individuals navigating the prospect of discovery and adversity. On today's program, Damien Hughes. Now, before we start the episode, some background. It was earlier in the year, around when COVID was introduced to our lives. At this time, after years of job security, I found myself at the start of this new chapter. It was a new challenge, I told myself, in saying it out loud, perhaps to give me a sense of self-assurance. On the inside, it was anything but. I dare you to mix any type of uncertainty with a global pandemic. It's formidable. And so that's the backdrop of when I came across my next guest, Damien Hughes. I discover him as the co-host of what's called the High Performance Podcast. And like the name on the bottle, it offers a glimpse into the lives of high-achieving, successful individuals. And there was something about listening to people who had quote-unquote made it, still talk and wonder about how they're still trying to make it. While I had plenty to be proud of what one accomplishes in life, words like high-achieving and successful still felt elusive. And so I pick up my Kindle to look Damien up, to get to know more about him. And prior to the podcasting venture, he had written multiple best-selling business books and critically acclaimed sporting biographies. At Manchester Metropolitan University, he's also the visiting professor of organizational psychology and change. But a while back, he wrote this book called The Winning Mindset. And that's where we start the story.
The story that I started the Winning Mindset book was, I was in the corner for a world title fight. So my dad trained a guy that was boxing for the WBC World Super Middleweight title. And that's the most prestigious of all the sort of the alphabet titles in the sport. And the context was that the guy that I was working with was the challenger. It was a guy called Robin Reed, and he was fighting the champion called Vincenzo Nardiello.
Vincenzo Nardiello, in 1996, he's a well-respected champion. Damien, with his father as the coach, they were in the corner of the challenger, Robin Reed, and at this juncture, he's only 3 years into his professional boxing career. As the underdog, they would have to map out a game plan to beat Nardiello, the reigning champ, on his home turf.
So the plan had been, Ezra, that this guy Reed was going to keep moving, don't stop, just keep moving. So you keep throwing punches, but you're always throwing punches on the move. For the guy we were working with, Robin Reed, the fight was going brilliantly. He was boxing exactly as the plan was going, and he was winning on points, and everything was going smoothly. And I remember thinking, what would I say now if it was my responsibility to get in the corner and speak to him? What would I say? So I started running through my head the range of options that I felt were available to me. And I came up with things like, I'd say, keep going, or you're doing really well, or maybe you'd caution him and say, don't drop your hands. So the round ended. My dad got in the corner and I'm holding the bucket so I could hear the conversation. And then my dad delivered 5 words. He just said to him, sit down when you punch. And he left it for a few moments, and Reed nodded, and he went, sit down when you punch. And he went, fine. He sent him back out, and he knocked his opponent out.
He's not showing too much inclination to rise, and Cappuccino counts him out, and Robin Reed Italy, away from home, has caused a sensation. He's won this WBC super middleweight crown.
Now, for anyone listening to this that's thinking, okay, what does that mean? Now, sit down when you punch is a very simple phrase, but it, within boxing, it contains an awful lot of wisdom. Sit down when your punch says, stop moving and start standing still. So the idea is that when you sit down, you have to put both feet on the floor. And when you put both feet on the floor and throw a punch, there's more power contained within it. So that phrase of sit down when you punch is an awful lot of wisdom contained in five words. Now, the reason I start with that story is because it was the courage that he had the ability and the confidence to be able to take 30 years worth of wisdom and not overcomplicate it, not go on a big monologue, but just deliver five words and then stand back and let the recipient digest it and then do something with it. So I remember that from 1996, thinking that is the difference a great coach can make.
Damien's father would come to be known as the godfather of Manchester boxing, the British Cus D'Amato. That reputation would be harnessed over time. The time and energy he would dedicate to a small gym he formed in the 60s at the Colliehurst and Mostyn Boxing Club.
My father is still around. He's quite poorly these days, but he's called Brian Hughes. And he'd grown up in post-war Manchester as an illegitimate child. And in the Catholic neighbourhood he grew up in, that was a real stigma. And so there was two things that sort of drove him very much, that he'd gone into boxing when he was a young man himself, and he didn't have a father figure or a mentor looking out for him, and he got himself badly hurt. So he was put into environments that any responsible adult wouldn't have done for him, but because he had no responsible adult there, he got badly hurt in terms of when he was trying to box, he was overmatched against people that were stronger and more talented than him. And I think that was a significant moment in his life, because when he set up the boxing gym, because it was his passion, he was determined that no child would ever be abused in that environment, that you would never be hurt or come to any harm in that thing. So he saw himself very much as being a father figure, the father figure that he'd never had within that environment. My father was a boxing coach from well before I was even born. And like a lot of boxing clubs around the world, they often tend to be based in inner city areas, and with that, they can often be quite deprived. And that was certainly the case where I grew up, that the boxing gym was in the area of North Manchester that a few years ago was categorised as being the third poorest district in Europe. And that'll give you an idea of the kind of social issues that often befall places like that. But the boxing club was very much seen as a sanctuary from the outside world for a lot of people. So whilst in that particular gym, my dad trained guys that went on to become world boxing champions. But the vast majority of people that came through those doors never set foot in a boxing ring. But they came in there almost as a sanctuary from some of the difficulties of the outside world.
What fascinated the most about in reading your book was the understanding of what trip wires are, and how I thought of how kindergarten teachers were probably the masters at trip wires. But maybe you can elaborate on that.
That assertion of kindergarten teachers is absolutely right. I think they are sort of ninjas at this. So if I explain what a tripwire is, the idea behind it is that we go through our day often on autopilot. So we develop this concept in psychology known as heuristics. And what that means is we develop mental models like rules of thumb that allow us to navigate our way through a day without actually stopping and thinking too deeply. So, for example, you always take the same journey to work. It's the same commute, because to stop and think about doing something different requires a mental investment that your brain goes, I don't want to do that. Now, when we want to do something different or we want to focus in the moment, we need to have a plan in place that stops us doing the same thing over and over again and forces us to think in a different way. But your brain will resist that. So the idea of a tripwire says is, when you're clear about what you want to do differently, you almost need to put in place a tripwire that snaps you out of autopilot and forces you to very deliberately think about it. When you take that idea of a tripwire, you say, well, how do we build it into our normal lives? And the answer is, there are tripwire opportunities all around us. So I'll give you a nice little anecdote. It was a friend of mine that was doing quite a demanding corporate job. The way he described it, I'll describe it to you, was he said he'd travel home, he'd get to the door of the house, he said, and he'd already be on the phone, he'd be dealing with messages and things like that, and his children or his partner would be asking him questions. And in his head, he'd be thinking, I've got to send an email before I can enjoy being at home. I've got to just do this last piece of work. I've got to just finish this off. And he felt that he was almost becoming a pale shadow, a pale imitation of the father and the partner that he thought he was going to be. So we looked at tripwire opportunities. So I started by saying, how do you want your children to think about you? He had his answer to that, but he basically said, I want to be perceived as the best father in the world to my kids. So he said, right, so what do you need to do? So he came up with three tripwires on his journey home. So the first one was, he said, the 5-minute rule was, when he got 5 minutes away from home, he would turn his phone off. Or he said, if he was on the phone, he would stop where he was and finish the conversation, but he wouldn't go past that 5 minutes to home stage with the phone being on. So he said that forced him so that he wasn't going to be distracted when he arrived in the home. Tripwire number one. He said the second tripwire was that he said when he put the key in the lock to go through the door, that was the moment where he would ask himself, what would the best father in the world do when he walks through the door now? So it forced him to think about getting down to his kids' level and being enthusiastic to see his kids. And then his third tripwire was that, and this is a great phrase that he gave me, he said he would insist on having a Disney moment with whoever was in the house. So I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, he said, have you seen those Disney films where they're almost like the perfect family? He said, so I would insist that when I come home, my Disney moment was I would give a hug to whoever was in there and I'd ask whoever was in the house to come down and we'd have a group hug. And he said, and the brilliant thing was, he said, after I'd done those three things, the 5-minute rule, the key in the lock, and the Disney moment, he said, I could go back to being as miserable as I wanted and nobody would recognise it because I'd set the tone off. I had my tripwires in place that everyone thought I was the best dad in the world. Now, I'm using that as an example that this colleague of mine had shared with me years ago. So tripwires are all around us. And the idea behind it is it just breaks us out of autopilot and forces us to very deliberately focus and concentrate on being the best version of who we can be at that particular moment.
Talk to me a little bit about the importance and I guess the advantages and disadvantages of storytelling. So an example I would give you would be, I've been in sort of many corporate meetings where there are CEOs and managing directors who are telling their zero to hero story about how that company was built. And it has this sort of element of myth making. And of course, there'd be a certain percentage of that organization that would say, hey, I think we sort of can buy this. A discerning individual might argue that might be slightly stretching it, but the impact is arguably quite effective. And is there a distinction between that kind of storytelling with sort of the myth-making process, I guess?
Yeah, I think the purpose of a story is that you want to convey a certain impression. You want people to walk away with an idea behind it. So if it's, say, like a founder of an organization and you're telling something about the origins, because from that you're trying to convey the idea of some of the values that you want them to be endemic within the culture, that makes sense. If you're doing it because you want to show how you're the superhero that led it, what you're doing there is creating an autocratic culture that depends on their benevolence and their continued support. So the first question of a story is, what's the purpose behind it? What are you trying to convey to somebody? The mechanism of telling a story, though, is the bit that, to me, is fascinating, because telling a story is the most effective way of getting people to remember the point you wanted to make in the first place. So what we know is it taps into a concept known as the Kolmogorov complexity. Now, don't worry about the name. It's named after a Russian psychologist. But the Kolmogorov complexity says that if you tell a story, your brain opens up and receives it so much more. So you can take quite complex information and deliver a story form, and people will remember a lot more information. So where I wanted to do was capture a methodology of seeing these great storytellers at work and going, what do they do? And then I was listening to a TED talk many years ago when I heard a lady called Emma Coates share a methodology that I went, that's what these great storytellers do. Emma Coates had worked at Pixar, the animation studio, and she shared their methodology that what they do is that any Pixar film is delivered using six sentences. And the reason they follow it is because they've researched it to know it taps into every one of the fundamental aspects of great storytelling, right? So take a film like Finding Nemo, right? The pitch for Finding Nemo, so the very basic premise of Finding Nemo is it was a father and son love story involving fish. That was it. That's how they pitched it internally. So there's a simple message for you. And then the structure of Finding Nemo says, right, once upon a time, there was a widowed father and his disabled son that lived on a coral reef together. So we've established the narrative and the story starts. Every day, the father used to worry about his son's safety, and he used to urge him not to go to the edge of the reef because that was where trouble lay. One day, the son ignored his father because he was frustrated at him, and he went to the coral reef where he got captured by divers and taken to live in a fish tank outside of Sydney. Because of that, the father had to confront his own deep, dark fears and go out into the ocean in a desperate attempt to rescue his son. Because of that, his son eventually came to recognize that his dad wasn't a pain, he just loved him more than anything else in the ocean. Finally, father and son reunite with an enhanced relationship. They go back to the coral reef and they live happily ever after. So if you think about your podcast, right, let's show how applicable this is, right? So let's just make it up on the spot. So say, right, let me tell you a story about Ezra's podcast that launches later on this year, right? Every day people travel to work and listen to podcasts on their commute, right? One day they tune into Ezra's podcast that contains a wide range of guests that are coming up with very practical solutions. Because of that, they feel that they've learned something by listening to the podcast. And because of that, they recommend Ezra's podcast to other friends. And so finally, this podcast is the biggest one in the world. Right. I've just made that up off the top of my head, but I've followed the structure that Pixar use to be able to explain the purpose of what you're trying to do on this podcast that hopefully people will remember.
It's a fascinating thing because as I've been developing sort of the work and the episodes and sort of structuring these six sentences mirrors the challenges of actually creating a focus of what it is that we want to share with others. And so I've been having discussions with my team and well, what the f*** is this podcast about?
Yeah.
And it is a very fascinating challenge to be committed and specific to what it is whilst creating that narrative.
100%.
Hook.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I might be wrong here, but I sense it's about... But I think it's about how do you educate, how do you share knowledge with people that help them within their own lives, it's broad enough to say as a parent, a partner, a child, a student, a business leader, you're just trying to get knowledge that says, how can I help you with the everyday challenges of it? You know, like we spoke off air before about your driver is like you're creative, you're a creator, you're somebody that's out there coming up with ideas. And by definition of that, some people won't like those ideas. So if you're worrying about what they'll say before you set off on that creative journey, you'll end up diluting the ideas that you have in the first place, and it'll be a lesser version of what you can do. So this has been an interesting feature that I've asked some of these high performers how they deal with it. And what's been really fascinating is they have a core group of people. It's not that they don't listen. but they have a core group of people that when they speak, they listen. But if it's anybody outside of that domain, they're a little bit more circumspect about whether they'll take it on board or not. And it's not that that's not arrogance or not being wanting to improve. It's just that if I spend time trying to keep everybody happy, I'll be the first casualty of that. So again, I'd say to you, some people might not like what you're doing with this podcast, and that's fine. But that tells us that at least you stand for something. And you can say, well, go and find another podcast. But there'll be a lot more people that will engage with it because of who you are and the passion and the integrity of your vision.
Damien, that was amazing.
Is that all right?
Thank you so much. That just because, you know, it's that same sort of curiosity of like, oh, do we have something here? I can tell you of this one, I know we have something. So,
That's really kind. But I remember what I said. I think, and honestly, like, take my lesson from it. If people hate it, that's good because it stands for something. There'll be far more people that love it, and they're the ones that you focus your energy and attention on.
Well, it was the pep talk I didn't know I needed, and I hope you got something out of it too. Damien Hughes now lives in Manchester. Now, Damien's interviewed many sporting icons, and he's successfully turned them into critically acclaimed books, of which you should check out. It's listed under the show notes. But for sports fans and observers alike, I've put together an accompanying bonus episode where we talk about, among other things, Jose Mourinho's approach to guided discoveries, and Damien shares some insight into the evolution of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the Manchester United manager. All of that and more in another edition of Project Notes that's available right now. At the time of recording, I asked him what books were on his bedside table. He shared two books, the first, The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, and The Coddling of the American Mind, How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. That's written by Greg Lukianov and Jonathan Haidt. For more details about this interview, including resources, transcripts, and recommendations, visit ezrazide.com. The Ezra Zide Project is made by me, Ezra Zide. I host, produce, and edit the show. I had help and support from Rama Pauzi, Shunsaw, Sabrina Yusuf, Raisa Nadine, Melati Kamaruddin. This episode was mixed and mastered by Meals. Music for this episode is provided by Blue Dot Sessions. Our social media is up and running. Follow our handle at Project Ezra Zide for Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And there's also a weekly newsletter that you can sign up for at ezrazide.com. See you in a bit.